This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The overpopulation already poses a health hazard, especially considering the COVID-19 pandemic and the recommended measures to curtail the spread of the disease.
That was Zimbabwe Information Minister Monica Matsuvangwa on a presidential amnesty for the country's overcrowded prisons to reduce the spread of COVID-19. Details coming up also. Congo Republic President Denis Sassou Nguesso has been re-elected. And the World Health Organization is warning that the fight against tuberculosis is being lost. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The new Libyan government headed by Abdulhamid Dabiba faces monumental hurdles, starting with renewing basic services, unifying the central bank and other state institutions, and organizing democratic elections promised for December. But the most troubling challenge is how to get rid of some 20,000 foreign fighters, with Turkey and Russia failing so far to withdraw the mercenaries and massive quantities of armaments they shipped into the country. Wolfgang Poschdai, former Austrian military attaché to Libya, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi whether the unity government can handle this challenge and if Russia would retreat from Libya.
For the time being, Prime Minister Dabiba focuses on the economy. There was no concrete action from his side with regard to the security sector for the time being. Foreign forces and mercenaries just showed up in some of his statements to the media and in talks with foreign politicians and diplomats. He did also not yet take action with regard to the many militias in Tripoli. When there were recently several murders in Benghazi, he demanded investigations immediately. When militias in Tripoli from the so-called Stability Support Agency, an agency which was created in January by Prime Minister Sarraj, killed a young man and destroyed several houses and also killed some more people in Kikla, Dabiba did not say a word about this. So I would say he is well aware of his limits. He follows some kind of realpolitik. Solving the militia problem in Tripoli, in the greater capital area, or getting rid of all the foreign forces and the mercenaries, let alone of the Turkish forces, is out of bounds for the time being for him. He is aware of this, as I said, but I'm not sure that this will do him any good in the midterm, especially with regard to the militias in Tripoli.
Apart from Libya's 7 million people, it seems that the big winner in the political settlement is Turkey. Mr. Dabiba, the new prime minister, is seen as a Turkish ally, and the new government has pledged to retain a maritime agreement granting Ankara potentially valuable rights. At the same time, the survival of his government may depend on whether Russian President Vladimir Putin orders out the mercenaries of Wagner Group, along with their aircraft, missile batteries, and other heavy armaments. Would Russia retreat from Libya?
Not voluntarily. With regard to Turkey, you are right. Turkey is certainly a big winner of the new political developments. Libya is of utmost importance for Turkey, keeping its ever-deteriorating economic situation in mind. And the stability and prosperity of Turkey must also be an interest, an important interest for Europe and for the United States and for the whole neighborhood of Turkey. Just days ago, after Erdogan fired the central bank chief for raising interest rates to counter inflation, Turkey's stocks bounced and the lira tumbled again, losing about 9%, reaching a new record low of the lira versus the dollar. So Turkish movements in Libya or future policy over Libya has its limits. They need to stay in there. They need to exploit the economic relationship with Libya. On the other side, also Russia still pursues its strategic interests in Libya, but for them it's more an opportunity and not a necessity. Wagner mercenaries, paid allegedly by the Emirates, are a useful tool for Putin. For the LNA, they act as a tripwire and as a backup against an attack of Western Libyan Turkish-backed forces towards the oil crescent. This is quite costly. I'm sure the Emirates will pay for them only as long as they are really needed. But Wagner will stay as long as there are Turkish forces in Libya, and as long there is a perceived threat of an offensive from the West which could not be handled by the LNA alone.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché to Libya, speaking with my colleague Mohamed Al-Shenawi. Official results show that Congo Republic President Denis Sassou Nguesso has been re-elected with more than 88% of the vote. This extends his 36 years leading the Central African oil-producing country despite a prolonged economic crisis. His chosen rival, Guy Brice Parafé-Kolela, who died hours after the polls closed, received less than 8%. Kolela was being evacuated to France to be treated for COVID-19 when he died. The main opposition party boycotted the vote, and two of Sassou's main rivals were convicted of crimes after the last election in 2016. The World Health Organization warns the fight against tuberculosis is being lost, and urgent action must be taken to bring this age-old disease, which kills over 1 million people each year, to an end. The UN's health agency is issuing this stark warning as it marks World TB Day. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The clock is rapidly ticking to 2022. This is the date by which global leaders have committed to end tuberculosis. Data show that goal will be missed. Health officials agree the COVID-19 pandemic has dealt a heavy blow to global efforts to screen, diagnose, and provide early life-saving treatment to people with TB. Philippe Glazou, an epidemiologist in WHO's global TB program, says the pandemic has severely disrupted health and social systems, adversely affecting global TB control measures. He says data from 84 countries show an estimated 1.4 million people missed out on access to care in 2020.
Left untreated, TB results in about 50% case fatality. About half of the people who have TB, the disease, die from it if they are left untreated. More die from it if they have comorbidities, particularly HIV infection or undernutrition. We've modeled that excess mortality to about 500,000 additional TB death.
Tuberculosis is the world's leading infectious cause of death, killing 1.4 million people annually. About 1.8 billion people, nearly a quarter of the global population, are infected with the bacteria that causes TB. The WHO estimates about 3 million people develop TB each year before the onset of COVID-19. The director of WHO's Global Tuberculosis Program, Teresa Kasaeva, says the pandemic has caused a significant drop in the number of people formally diagnosed with TB, though not the actual number who developed the disease. She says the WHO fears more than 500,000 people may have died from TB in 2020 because they were unable to obtain a diagnosis.
Systematic screening should be scaled up to help reach all people with TB prevention and care. Systematic screening is critical to ensure we can detect TB early in the people who need it, while also identifying people who could benefit from TB preventive treatment.
The World Health Organization reports more than 20% fewer people now are receiving preventive care and treatment than in 2019. It says countries with the biggest comparative gaps include Indonesia, South Africa, the Philippines, and India. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Campaigners against tuberculosis, a bacterial disease that mainly affects the lungs, say the coronavirus pandemic has rolled back years of progress in treating TB. But Nigeria, one of the countries hardest hit by the disease, has managed to maintain its progress, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian Francis Ekong was diagnosed with tuberculosis at the Asokoro Teaching Hospital in Abuja in September 2013. He says he believes he contracted the infection while attending a job interview in his hometown in Akwa Ibom State.
I suspected that I actually drank from a cup somebody used, somebody who is a patient, because then I was just moving from one joint to another joint, drinking.
Ekong became very sick soon after and could not keep the job. His family advised him to get a separate apartment and isolate himself for treatment. He says it was not easy for him and it took months to get better.
The experience was a gory one. The pain, the sleepless night, I was having heat in my chest, my ribs, not able to breathe very well.
The World Health Organization ranks Nigeria as one of the top two TB-burdened countries in Africa and in the top eight globally. More than 400,000 cases are detected here every year. An advocacy group, the Stop Tuberculosis Partnership, says global diagnosis and treatment of the disease dropped by 23% in 2020 because of the pandemic, setting progress back to levels last seen in 2009. However, the group's latest report, published Friday, also notes Nigeria, unlike many other high-burden countries, recorded a slight increase in TB diagnosis and treatment. Lusika Dichiu is the executive director of the group.
The Nigerian government actually is between the very few that were able to keep the focus on TB in such a way that we looked at the numbers of Nigeria, but we noticed that there is not a drop in the cases. So they succeeded to maintain the level of 2019 and even slight increase of around 8% in the number of people diagnosed and treated.
Nigerian officials say the increase was achieved by incorporating TB testing into the national COVID-19 response. Itohowo Uko is a director at Nigeria's National Tuberculosis and Leprosy Control Program.
We have some machines, diagnostic tools, like our expert gene expert machine. In some centers, we now integrate the diagnosis of both TB and then the COVID-19. And so when a person visits that center, the person will be tested for both TB and then COVID-19.
Last week, President Muhammadu Buhari accepted a three-year grant of $890 million from foreign donors to fight HIV, malaria, and tuberculosis. This is good news for officials with Stop TB Partnership, who say they are optimistic that even with COVID-19 pandemic yet to be tamed, Nigeria will continue to improve levels of tuberculosis diagnosis and treatment. Timothy Ubiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The former leader of South Africa's main opposition party predicts a dire future for the country unless President Cyril Ramaphosa is courageous enough to rid the ruling African National Congress of allegedly corrupt and incompetent senior members. Tony Leon led the Democratic Party, now Democratic Alliance, in the 1990s and worked closely with Nelson Mandela as South Africa transitioned to democracy after decades of apartheid. In a new book entitled Future Tense, Reflections on My Troubled Land, Leon also expresses mixed feelings about the ANC government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. Darren Taylor has the story.
Tony Leon spent a lot of time with Cyril Ramaphosa in the early 1990s, when both were helping to draft South Africa's first democratic constitution. He says he respected the current president as a principled, highly intelligent man. But Leon's disappointed with Ramaphosa's present-day leadership.
In this book, I ask actually, what is Cyril Ramaphosa's vision? He's a bit of this and a bit of that. He gets a lot of kudos from the business community, not for having created any new opportunities, but for having amassed a great deal of wealth through a range of policies of which he's been the most perhaps conspicuous beneficiary in this country.
Leon points out that Ramaphosa's a former trade unionist and Communist Party leader, yet is considered to be pro-business. That, says Leon, is despite the president pushing socialist and populist policies, such as his support for expropriation of land for state use without compensating owners.
And then, of course, he's also hemmed in, and this is a point that's made by many people, by enormous internal constraints and divisions in his own party.
The ANC remains divided between members who continue to support the allegedly corrupt former president Jacob Zuma and those who back Ramaphosa, who's considered a reformist. But Leon questions what Ramaphosa is actually trying to reform. Because, says the Democrat, all the president seems to do is set up commission of inquiry after commission of inquiry that end up going nowhere. Good leaders are people of action, says Leon.
We haven't seen that with Cyril Ramaphosa. So I think there's a personal ambivalence about him. I think there's a political weakness that we've seen evident.
Leon believes the president knows exactly what needs to be done to strengthen South Africa's ailing economy, such as privatizing certain state enterprises. But he adds, Ramaphosa isn't brave enough to risk his leadership by alienating some senior colleagues.
We've been avoiding the hard choices and the tough decisions for far too long, and the consequence of that avoidance is now in plain sight. We're on the eve of a debt trap. We've got a fiscal cliff that we really start to plunge over, and we've got a population that is not vaccinated, that is not at work, a great deal of them, and that is very, very fragile in terms of the so-called social compact that we thought we'd established in this country some decades back.
Leon says the government abused the power given it a year ago when it announced a lockdown because of COVID-19.
A lot of decisions were made based on imperfect information and with much urgency. So I think, you know, on that basis, one can't be too critical. Where you can be exceptionally critical is how almost the excuse of the national lockdown became the playground for state control freaks who decided that every problem was a nail and they had the state hammer and they would nail it down. And that's done huge damage.
Leon says although, for example, Ramaphosa spoke out against security force assaults on citizens who were allegedly breaking lockdown rules, he failed to stop his police minister from supporting the brutality. The ANC issued a statement dismissing Leon's book as the ramblings of someone who's no longer relevant to politics in South Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe is tackling prison overcrowding with a presidential amnesty that will pardon thousands of inmates to help fight COVID-19 and cut the public's tax burden. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has the details.
Information Minister Monica Mutswangwa announced the presidential amnesty recently.
Cabinet considered and approved the proposed general amnesty. The proposed general amnesty is targeted at all prisoners who have served at least one-third of their sentences, save for those convicted of specified offences such as follows: murder, treason, rape, or any sexual offence, carjacking, robbery, stock theft, and public violence.
She says those who already have served 15 years of life sentences will also qualify for the amnesty. Add to this, she says, the move will help in the fight against COVID-19.
The amnesty will decongest the prison institution, whose population currently stands at 20,407 against the prison's holding capacity of 17,000. The overpopulation already poses a health hazard, especially considering the COVID-19 pandemic and the recommended measures to curtail the spread of the disease.
Rita Nyamupinga, director at Female Prisoners Support Trust, welcomes the amnesty.
I think decongesting the prisons is a very welcome idea. At the moment, we've got over 20,000 inmates, some with petty cases. When we want to look at it, the women's section, we don't have women who have got serious offences. There are some, but very few.
She adds that the COVID-19 period has been difficult for prisoners since no visitors were allowed. Inmates have often survived poor conditions in prison with the support of loved ones who often bring food and supplies. It is not yet clear how many will benefit from this amnesty, but in recent years, the presidential amnesty has freed 3,000 inmates. Some are hopeful that the number will rise due to COVID-19. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinabashe from Harare.
Botswana has resumed an overnight curfew and banned public gatherings after the country's COVID-19 death toll rose. Botswana attracted praise for its early success in fighting the coronavirus, but February and March have been the deadliest periods since the first fatality was reported a year ago. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
President Mokgweetsi Masisi announced the introduction of restrictions yesterday, saying 332 of the 485 deaths recorded in the country have occurred in the last 2 months. The 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. curfew is back. Public gatherings are banned until March 31, with further restrictions expected ahead of the Easter holiday. In easing restrictions earlier this month, Masisi had warned the situation remained dire.
You may have observed over the past few weeks that the pandemic tide has not ebbed in Botswana, but has spiraled as the disease burden on our healthcare system and the economy increases in spite of our robust containment measures. Bagaetso, our hospitals and healthcare facilities are overwhelmed due to COVID-19.
Botswana recorded its highest COVID-19 death toll in February, with 193 succumbing to the virus. At least 139 have died this month, with calls growing for authorities to roll out a vaccination program. Deputy President Slamba Tsohwane says the vaccine will be rolled out in the next 3 weeks.
We have already received a donation of 30,000 of cough shield doses from India. The vaccination was received on the 9th March 2021. CovShield has been approved for use by Botswana Medicines Regulatory Authority, BOMRA for short. It is anticipated that the vaccine will be rolled out at the earliest in the next 3 weeks.
Botswana is expected to extend the state of emergency that has been in place since last April. For VOA, this is Mkwandisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbiya Baru, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.